Everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for the 47th, count them, 47 Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call. We are on the Progressive Radio Network in my Solartopia Green Power and Wellness slot. Greetings, everybody at PRN. This call for you will go for an hour. We will talk for an hour and a half. So if you want to join us after the hour that is on the radio, come to electionprotection2024.org. Election Protection, all one word, electionprotection2024.org. And you can pick us up. We will go for 90 minutes. It's 5 o'clock Eastern time on Monday, April 19th. And I got to say, by way of introduction, this is Patriots Day for a reason. Does anybody, being a history professor, I'm going to ask real quick, who knows why it's Patriots Day? Lexington and Concord. What happened was in 1775, the Brits were looking for the two big revolutionaries, Samuel Adams and John Hancock, and they had 700 troops, and they chased them out to first through Lexington and then to Concord. And they didn't get them, but they did confront a bunch of American farmers in the town square in Concord, and they shot them. They killed 8 of them. But there was a small detail. Those 700 troops had to get back to Boston. And it's a long walk from Concord to Boston. And while they're walking back from Concord to actually going to Cambridge, the American farmers in Western Massachusetts got their guns and they picked off 250 of the 700 British troops that were walking back to Cambridge. They killed or wounded 250, and they got those tactics straight from the indigenous. It was the introduction of indigenous style warfare into Western history. And that was the beginning of the American Revolution. And that's why it's Patriots Day. And I got a call from Pete Pekarsky today, who told me, which I never knew, that this is also the anniversary of the beginning of the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto during World War II, when the Jews rose up against the Nazis. So it's a double anniversary, and we will celebrate it as we discuss trying to restore democracy, which came to America, by the way, from the indigenous. American democracy was born with the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois Confederacy, and don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise. And the Iroquois Confederacy was a matriarchy, and that's where we're headed again. God help us. For those of you interested, I think I mentioned this before, the statistics show very clearly that the countries that did best fighting the COVID in this world have all been led by women. You can put all the men countries over here, all the women countries over here, and all the women-led countries did better than the men-led countries in fighting the COVID. So there you go. We are expecting Andrea Miller at some point soon. I do want a couple of you run very important Zoom calls. Emily, I put you on the spot again. You have a Zoom call, Emily Levy. You have a Zoom call later today. You want to announce it and put the link in the chat?
Actually, it's an internal call for scrutineers. And anyone here is welcome to join scrutineers at scrutineers.org. I'll put the link into the chat. But it's not a public call. It's
okay,
just for
that's
our members.
Fine. So do join scrutineers if you can.
And I do have another announcement.
Ray Lutz, are you on the call? Ray Lutz, are you on yet? If not, I do want to call on Tatanka from the indigenous community. Tatanka just joined us. There was an obit in the New York Times today of a very, very important woman leader who passed on, LaDonna Brave Bull Allard. Tatanka, do you want to say a couple words about LaDonna?
Oh, I just want to send her spirit. She was one of the three principal grandmothers. It was on her property in the northern boundary of Standing Rock. that all the young people from the Red Warriors met that actually started the Standing Rock, where they went on a run, they went on a march together. She was, she and Madonna Thunderhawk and Phyllis Young are the principal architects of what happened at Standing Rock. So she's a very, very important person, will be sorely missed. Our prayers are with her on the other side. And we're just filled with gratitude. And thank you, LaDonna, for your life. Aho.
Well, I never met her, but I was blown away by her obit. If anybody's interested, it's in the New York Times today. I'm sure there are others being posted. And thank you to Tonka, and thank you, LaDonna, for that was one of the most important, talk about, you know, a Patriots Day. That was one of the most important confrontations, physical. It's still going on. I mean, Biden has not yet shut the Keystone Pipeline. We did stop the other one, the KXL, is that what it was? Keystone.
Yeah. And Danny is still working with Judge Boasberg and Army Corps engineers. You know, that is still going on. They haven't really, you know, they should be digging that thing out, and it hasn't happened yet. But LaDonna was just an amazing leader. And if people don't know, her one of the other grandmothers, Madonna Thunderhawk, has a movie out called Warrior Woman. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful movie on her life. And Phyllis Young is like the historian of the entire Lakota experience. She's the one with the collective community memory, another brilliant woman who also makes beautiful blankets and, you know, has graced our friends and our house for a long time. So,
all right, so maybe we'll show maybe we can show a clip of that at a later
that would
Zoom
be good
gathering. That would be great. And
thank you, Swago.
I'm glad to see that you're in your car and not driving. So please, thank you, and stay stationary if you would. So listen, while we're waiting for Andrea Miller, Joel Siegel and I have watched the new movie that's just come out on Amazon. I hate to patronize Amazon. Why a guy with $130 billion like Jeff Bezos needs to bust a union is beyond me. I have had friends who work at Amazon, and apparently it's a nightmare. But Amazon did fund this movie called All In, based on the life and work of Stacey Abrams. And I'm wondering, Steve Caruso, can we show? This is a trailer for this movie. And then Joel and I, who have seen the whole movie, will talk about it. This is a 3-minute trailer. So let's hope the technicals work here. Steve Caruso, if you give it a shot. Okay, we need the sound. Always takes a minute.
You have to stop sharing, and you have to click those two buttons before you share it. It says share a video audio before you share it. Yeah, because it won't do it. So you have to stop your share.
Steve, did you hear that from Danette?
So stop your share. Mm-hmm. Now go into screen share, and there's going to be at the lower left-hand corner, it says share sound and optimize for video clip. Click both of those and then hit share.
If the power of the right to vote was truly made available to everyone in America, it would change the future of this nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey Abrams!
When I started running for governor, we anticipated that voter suppression was going to be instrumental in Brian Kemp's campaign, and we were right.
We've been in line for 5 hours.
They said, you've already voted. Looks like several days ago.
No, I would have remembered that.
Thousands of people were told no and didn't have the authority to demand better.
These lines are insane. We have precinct consolidation, non-training of local election officials.
I knew something had gone horribly wrong. The system that is supposed to protect our democracy didn't work the way it was supposed to.
States implement voter suppression laws all across the country.
Things like new voter ID laws, purging. You're knocked off the roll. Gerrymandering.
Changing the voting boundaries.
Ohio is a use it or lose it state.
In the United States, the right to vote is the only right you can lose simply for not using it.
Jim Crow 2.0, that's what we're saying. We've got a lot of work to do.
When we started as a country,
6% of people were eligible to vote. There are still forces that are determined to keep citizens from voting.
Unless we fight for the right to vote, our democracy is put at risk.
The fight over voting rights is ultimately about power.
The states have figured out how to stop African Americans, Hispanics, Asian Americans, the young, and the poor from voting.
History is never a straight line. It's always a fight.
I will not concede because the erosion of our democracy is not right.
I'm trying to make history. All this power.
The vote matters.
You belong. You have value.
So Joel and I have both seen this film. I don't know if anyone else has seen it. I did break down and do it on Amazon. I didn't have to pay for it because my kids had it. But Joel, do you want to talk a bit about this film and then I will?
Sure. Hello, everybody. I did notice in the chat, Emily wanted a minute to announce the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act Action Day. Emily, did you want to talk about that before we get started?
Sure, thank you. So May 8th is National John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Action Day. There's going to be a national broadcast and then votercades in at least 75 cities around the country. It's sponsored by the Transformative Justice Coalition, Public Citizen, Declaration for American Democracy, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, and End Citizens United. Over 100 other endorsers, including Scrutineers, the group I lead, have endorsed the event. I encourage you to go to the link that I put in the chat, johnlewisdayofaction.org. For those listening on the radio, there's a clickable link in the chat as well. You can join an event in your city. You can host an event. There's a training about how to do that this Wednesday. Let me know if you need information about that. And please attend and help publicize it so people know about it. It's in advancement of the For the People Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, DC statehood, and ending the filibuster.
Thank you. And we will talk about all those further on in the call. Joel's going to give us an update on our progress in Washington and elsewhere on ending the filibuster, winning S1, HR4, and DC statehood, and a bunch of other stuff. So that's all going to come soon. I saw this full-length feature film. Thank you, Emily. Thank you for that. And I'm sorry for those fish that are being eaten by the hippo. We have a little compassion here, but film is very, very high production quality. It tells us all about Stacey Abrams. It does not get to the fall 2020 election or the January election. In other words, it doesn't get to the Georgia Miracle, which we are going to make a film about. But it's highly effective, very moving, and very educational. Definitely worth seeing. If you're at all an election protection activist, I think it's a must see. I guess it's about 80 minutes. And it is one of those top down, very slick, but in this case, very good content documentary films. Joel, what would you say about it?
Absolutely astonishing movie, must see for all people who care about the issue of saving our democracy. But the one thing that it did a great job was it really portrayed Stacey Abrams as a very long time civil rights leader and a real powerhouse. And the other thing, it draws a straight line from slavery and Reconstruction, the original language in the Constitution where women could not vote and Black people were, you know, not even considered a human being. So I thought that was quite powerful. I was very angry as I watched it. I was very angry when I finished watching it. It really goes into the insanity.
I'm not.
Go ahead.
Sure. It shows the insanity of the voter suppression laws and just how dangerous they are to democracy and how they're being passed, throughout the country. But what was very frightening about the movie too, it showed that Stacey Abrams would have been the governor of Georgia, first Black female, I think would have been the first Black female governor.
Yes.
Had it not been for voter purging. So in an act of absolute fascism, the Secretary of State, Kemp, who then ran as governor, purged the voting rolls, I think it was over 200,000 people, and said that they were not, properly registered. Well, it turned out that a large percentage of those people had no business being taken off the voting rolls. And what was ironic, when Kemp went to go vote for himself, he wasn't on the voting rolls. They just said he didn't have, they didn't, I mean, it's incredible. Then when Stacey Abrams went to go vote, they said that her registration was invalid, right? So it was, and then the other thing it showed too, which was very frightening, was that I'm pretty sure this was the movie about Hillary Clinton and voter suppression. I want to say Wisconsin or Michigan, but
yes.
She could have actually won the presidency had it not been for voter purges and voter suppression. Where was that, Michigan or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin. It was Wisconsin.
Yeah, in other words, she could have won. So the movie does basically state that we are in a new Confederacy and a kind of a new secessionist movement, and that the weapon that they're going to use, the far right wing, is taking away the vote. And they did show one elected official who basically stated when he was being interviewed that, we Republicans have come to a conclusion. The only way we can win the vote is through voter suppression.
And they've been very clear on that. I am reminded that the same thing happened to me in Ohio. And that's why I got into this movement. I lived in the same house at that time for almost 20 years. I voted in the same precinct at the college where I was teaching. And I couldn't get, they wouldn't send me an absentee ballot, it was like, hello. So that's why I became a plaintiff in a federal lawsuit that we won demanding the voter records in all of Ohio. We're joined by Ray McClendon and Gloria Tinubu. Ray, you're in the middle of this in Georgia. I don't know if you've seen this film, but you want to give us a couple comments? We saw the trailer.
Sure, thanks. I've seen the film. As Joel said, it's an excellent film. And it's a precursor to what we saw in the general election and in the runoff and the reason for the passage of SB 202, that they needed to be even more brazen than they were. First of all, Kemp did indeed purge over 330,000 people from the rolls as Secretary of State prior to his run for governor. To give you context, and it was disproportionately people of color that were purged from the rolls. To put this in context, in 2016, Trump won Georgia by 211,000 votes. Stacey Abrams lost the gubernatorial race by 55,000 votes. So you can see what the impact of that kind of voter purge was on the election. We also know that we move forward now to SB 202, and voter purges are going to be mandated. And for and we've talked about this on prior broadcasts, the Republican-controlled General Assembly now has removed the Secretary of State from the voting authority on the state elections board, and they will have their own political hack as a voting member of that board, which means that two things will go on. One is that they will do even more voter purges as directed by this group. And if the local election boards do not follow the will of the state election board, they have the right to remove those local election boards. So we're in for a long-term major fight. And that's the reason why we're so grateful to see that Harvey and Joel and Steve and are going to join in the fight with Gloria, myself, and others, so we can take what the premise of this Amazon movie was and update it with a book and hopefully with some additional video content on what happened in spite of all of this with the Georgia miracle, what the reaction was through SB 202 and how we intend to overcome that for the 2021 municipal elections and get ready for 2022.
Okay. Truly amazing. Gloria Tinubu, do you want to jump in and add to that?
Yes, I just wanted to say that Stacey would have been the first Black female governor in the entire United States.
Yes, that's right.
Not just Georgia. And she would have been the first female governor in Georgia, Black or white, the first Black governor in Georgia, male or female.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and as far as I'm concerned, she was the rightful winner. She should have been the governor of Florida and of Georgia. And the governor of Florida is also illegitimately this Ron DeSantis that they're starting to talk so much about. There was also serious vote fraud in Florida as well at the same time. So we are recommending this film. We have put our heads together and to make a film of our own. We want to start to interview people, and we'll talk about that in future calls. I don't think we're going to go the route of Amazon or Netflix. Those are really high. Then the official release date of this film is not until September, although I have a note here from Kat Kramer. Kat does fantastic film gatherings in Los Angeles, at which I was at one. We spoke, that was The Man Who Saved the World, I think was the name of that film. Kat, do you want to jump in and tell people about your film gatherings in Los Angeles? Are you still with us?
Yes, sure. Thank you, Harvey. Actually, I may be doing it virtual, you know, because we don't know where we'll be at, but
okay.
I'm planning the 10th anniversary. It's actually the 12th, but I'm continuing the 10th on because I wasn't able to present anything in 2020 or 2019 because I was working on another project, but I'm going to have 10 films of social issues. The theme actually for this upcoming mini festival is Sheroes for Change. So it's all basically films about women, made by women, focusing on environmental issues and women's empowerment. And I'm going to be showing all in Fight for Democracy, the Stacey Abrams documentary, and have the filmmakers Liz and Lisa as part of my panel. And I had mentioned earlier in the chat that back earlier this month, we have a Stanley Kramer Social Justice Award at the African American Film Critics Association. And we were lucky to present Stacey Abrams and the filmmakers with that award virtually for their ceremony. So it's kind of interesting going from that presentation to being able to present the film with the filmmakers, and hopefully Stacy participating for Kat Kremer's films that change the world.
Wonderful.
Thank you, of course, so much for showing that trailer too, and getting
you'll keep us posted on when you're going to run this thing. It was really fun doing it in LA. We actually had I've never been on a red carpet before. That was really, really cool. But it was a wonderful event. And I'm sure when you do it virtual, we will help promote it and make sure that everybody knows about it. So Kat Kremer, thanks for joining us. And of course, your father made one of the great films of social criticism or progress on the beach. So you're definitely keeping up the family tradition, and we really appreciate it. So, yeah, okay. Now we want to have Joel and I are going to do an update. We're not sure Andrea Miller is going to join us on what's happening now with the SB1, HR4. Pete Pekarsky is on the stack. Pete, did you want to jump in and make a comment?
I do, Harvey. I want to, with all due respect to Brother Siegel, when the voters of Wisconsin, and voter suppression is unconstitutional, it should be stopped. It had an effect on what happened. However, when the voters of Wisconsin in 2016 and the voters in Florida, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania marked their ballots, those ballots were marked according to the standards used by our State Department to judge elections around the world. Those ballots were marked to elect Hillary Clinton as president and Tim Kaine as vice president. Applying the standards our State Department uses around the world.
Oh, he got muted. What happened? He got muted here.
Yeah, he was just saying the same thing over and over. I think we all got the point.
Okay, let him finish though.
Even with the suppression which happened, even with that suppression, when the votes were cast, enough votes were cast for Clinton to elect her in the four states I just mentioned. As we have made clear, and as others have made clear on this program, as we have made clear for 5 years, four years, and it's been made clear on this program since it started.
Okay.
Anyway, just so everybody understands what happened, I would not want misinformation to be spread by this very good program or okay. anybody on it.
Well, we got it. Thank you, Pete. And thank
anytime,
you.
Anytime, Harvey.
We got it. And thank you. Pete is the one who told me that this is the anniversary of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto. So thank you for that. And that's a fact that will stick with me forever. 1819, April 19th, the same as the Lexington and Concord. Joel Siegel, we talked about doing updates on what's happening with what now is Senate Bill 1 and HR 4. Do you want to jump in with that? And also on DC statehood, there have been developments this week as there are every week. What is the latest on that?
Sure. With HR 1 and S1, they're going to vote on this bill. There are some real serious problems in terms of the scope of the bill. So what they're going to try to do is pare it down so that it could survive a possible filibuster, or they may use budget reconciliation, but they're probably going to take out a lot of components of the bill, like the campaign finance reform parts of the bill. The progressives in the House want to pass it as is. Biden, most people know this about Biden. Biden does try to reach more consensus and reaches across the aisle. And I know that because I used to work, with him and his staff, and that's just the way he is. And so they're having all these meetings at the White House. The prognosticators are saying it's not going to pass. I don't agree with that. It is going to pass. It's about what version they're going to pass. The version that'll pass will be a bill that's going to be about restoring more voting rights to people. That's what I think. In terms of the gerrymandering, where they have these like bipartisan civil society commissions, not sure whether or not that will survive, because that's what Mitch McConnell is really experiencing a lot of angst about that. And But in terms of H.R. 4, I really think that that could pass even quicker than H.R. 1 and S.1. That bill I do think will pass. However, what I've been told is they're trying to make it litigation proof so that it could actually withstand a Supreme Court scrutiny. I've never heard of a bill, any bill that's totally litigation proof. But what Emily talked about, this national movement around H.R. 4 is unbelievably important. I do think that's a bill that we can pass. In terms of the movie, I'm really interested in what do we do with the movie that Stacey Abrams was in. I think, and Mike Hirsch can attest to the power of movies. I work on the movie Sicko with Michael Moore as the senior technical consultant. That one movie is one of the reasons why we passed the Affordable Care Act, but PDA showed the movie all across the country and at home at people's, we can't do that because of COVID, but I hope that movie will be utilized for fundraising, for awareness. I think it's something, not everyone is gonna watch it on Amazon. I just want to throw that in there because I think it's important about what do we do with this movie. It's a very important movie in terms of to educate. In terms of H.R. 51,
What is H.R. 51?
Oh, sorry, D.C. statehood.
Okay.
I just spoke to Charles Moreland today. They're really running up against, you know, serious roadblocks, even among the Democrats in Congress. And I had suggested that there be a national call-in day on 51. And I also approached PDA about doing a symposium and a national call-in day on statehood because it's, you know, it's controversial only because there would be two black senators or two progressive senators and more members of Congress, who are Democrats. But that's really, really running into serious roadblocks.
Well, we sure got our work cut out for us. There's no doubt about that. Ray McClendon, did you want to jump in and talk a bit about the film that we're talking about doing and also Gloria?
I've already given my comments, so I'm good.
Okay, good. And Gloria? Gloria, did you want to say anything?
I think we're okay in terms of, I don't think that we need to share anything just yet. We're good.
Okay, so in terms of the filibuster, we're looking at a mountain that we really have to move here between H.R. 1, which has become Senate Bill 1, to protect the vote, protect the right to vote, override some of the horrible repression that's going on now from Georgia all across the country. The H.R. 4 is the John Lewis Act. It is a little simpler. And we're hoping that we can get that passed somehow through the both houses of Congress. I don't think there's any doubt that it'll pass the House, but the Senate is the chief roadblock, of course. We have the DC statehood, where we keep seeing these ridiculous statements. People are saying, especially the Republicans, that the DC should be should be swallowed up by Maryland. I mean, you know, are they serious? Does anybody really take that seriously? We have other issues as well. So we are really up against it with a Senate that is proving to be very, very difficult to move. And we did have, thankfully, I think this is worth mentioning, what appears to be a definitive announcement that American troops will be leaving Afghanistan. And, I suppose we'll all believe it when we see it, but he has put a pretty definite and unmistakable deadline of September 11th on that. And I would be very surprised if he doesn't do it. So that will be cause for celebration. I'm sure we'll still be doing these calls when that happens, but we'll see about that. We have not heard anything about closing Guantanamo, which is also a core issue for our democracy. The idea that they set up a camp, offshore of Cuba, where people can be denied the bill access to the Bill of Rights. That remains a stain on our democracy forever. And he has not mentioned that. As you may recall, I'm sure many of you are too young to remember, when Obama came into power, he promised very loudly and very upfront that that he would shut Guantanamo, but that didn't happen. So, but in terms of these voter rights bills, we are really up against it with this Congress, as you all know, and we are hopefully making some progress in that direction. Towards that, Elsa, we're going to be joined by Andrea, who has yet to come on, to talk about democracy centers. Would you like to do that, please? Elsa Schaefer? Are you unmuted? Here we go. Elsa, I'm going to try and unmute you.
Got it. My fault, Harvey, not yours. So democracy centers are one of the three things that Andrea Miller and her Center for Common Ground and Reclaim Our Vote are doing this year. We've moved from the Reclaim Our Vote specific election and voter registration efforts to a year of education and engagement, civic education engagement, for a lot of those 8 to 10 states in which we have been working, particularly in rural areas where there isn't a lot of infrastructure to help on this front. And Andrea is setting up, thank you, Mike, for putting that in the chat. Andrea is setting up democracy centers in particularly some of the more rural counties that can address several counties in an area, so that there's a physical site with Wi-Fi access, because of course broadband is not in most of these places, where all of her presentations can be seen in those central areas, where it can be a central meeting place for the community, and where they can learn so much that many of us already have learned about how to be effective in both influencing legislation and influencing their local as well as more regional and state and then federal elected officials. We have 1.5 up and running. There are about another 7 that are about to come up. The objective is 40 altogether, but we're very purposefully choosing those areas to open in where we can have a wonderful local champion who already has a proven track record to be able to lead that, both in setting up local gatherings of people and local education, as well as linking into everything Andrea can bring us, whether it's from Harvey's world or from Washington, where she spent many decades, or connecting those of us, the 44,000 of us who volunteered this last year to help bring up voter registration for the disenfranchised. So the objective of these democracy centers are, one, to provide that local gathering place with both civic engagement and education, and then two, to be able to turn that moving into next year into local efforts for voter registration and getting out the word and being able to have local people say, but here's what we do want from you, elected officials. We did amazing maps. Lots of other people involved in this did amazing maps looking at the census data cut with the voter data from November to see where people were actually registered, people of color, and where they actually voted. And there are, in Georgia, for example, some way too many counties, particularly in the rural areas, where 70% of eligible African Americans are not registered to vote. And African Americans represent 34% of the Georgia population. The entire population is 38% people of color, but that 34%, think of the difference that makes in elections. So the point is to use these democracy centers and all of the assets Andrea weaves so beautifully to be effective to help raise the understanding and the activism of people in those local areas to make sure we never again get a 70% unregistered group of people who in turn don't vote.
So Emily is asking, where are the democracy's centers that are already in operation? Where have they opened?
The ones that are already in operation are in Georgia and in South Carolina, two of our core states. The original states we started with last year all had at least 20% people of color, had at least one, if not two, thank you, Georgia, Senate seats in play, and had a significant enough number of electoral votes that it was worth putting serious time into. And we sent more than 10 million postcards and texts and phone banks and, you know, phone calls and all that to make a lot happen. And originally South Carolina was not one of those groups, but a group of fabulous Black pastors got together and said, wait a minute, we love what you're doing in North Carolina and Georgia and, you know, Mississippi. We need you to do it here too. And we had been working generally with the state NAACP's and Black Voters Matters groups and Mi Familia Vota. And they said, we'll become a group. We need you here. And so we worked a lot with Souls to the Polls and all of the Black churches. And the Black churches are really a core part of all of this. I'm also the coordinator with the Unitarian Universalists nationally for Reclaim Our Vote. And that 700 church group made it their number one priority at their General Assembly, did 115,000 calls in 3 days, and then kept with us both postcarding and making phone calls throughout the two Georgia Senate elections also, making more calls than any other group that we had associated with us. So anybody you can send our way, Ray McClendon, thank you, Harvey, for introducing us to Ray, became such a stalwart within Georgia with the Atlanta, not just the Atlanta NAACP, but 19 of those counties that he relates to. And Ray, we couldn't ask for a better spokesperson, I might add.
Wow.
Thanks. I just wanted to say, Harvey, thanks, Elsa, for the shout out. But really, you, along with folks like Gloria Tinubu, really made a major difference. And the critical part of the strategy is that we focus on the big metro counties, and rightfully so. We should focus on those metro counties. Because there are major concentrations. But one of the critical things that happened to ensure the victories that we had was that, as Andrea likes to say, we took certain rural counties and made them less red. And that also had a cumulative effect. And so in many of these counties, which were predominantly red counties, they were not as bright red, and they were getting closer to purple. So that's a big part of this. The other thing is, in 2021, you know, we have three pillars of the NAACP. That is voter registration, education, and mobilization. Education is absolutely going to be a critical part of what we need to do in 2021 for the municipal elections as we prepare for 2022. These democracy centers, I believe Andrea told me the one you have open now is in Hawkinsville, Georgia, which is a little bit south of Warner Robins, Fort Valley, that kind of area. They don't get the normal kind of resources that we have in any of the metro areas. But they are vitally important as you begin to get into the Black Belt of South Georgia, Southwest Georgia. And so to have these kind of democracy centers that bring outside resources in to provide infrastructure for these groups that are struggling, that can't get funding from any of the traditional sources, but because of the efforts that folks like Elsa and Andrea can bring to the table. This will be a vital difference going into the November 2021 and the 22 elections to get some of these folks registered, get them educated on how to overcome the challenges of SB 202, have a trial run in 2021 so that we do not get caught and have in 2022 what happened in 2010.
Well, here's a question for you, Ray. Given the structural impositions that have been perpetrated so far by the Georgia legislature, what do you see happening between now and 2022 in Georgia? I mean, there are so many hurdles now. What exactly is the game plan?
Well, we're going to fight. That's why promoting this now is so important. We knew that after January 5th, that every action was going to call an equal and opposite reaction. We knew this already. So we're planning for that. And we need to build this infrastructure. That's why it's so important to support these democracy centers, to support the Save Our Democracy effort that you're going to be working with, because we've got to register people. We got to educate. We now have a couple of law firms that are going line by line through SB 202 so that we can educate voters now, this year, on what their rights are and how they can overcome the issues related to 202. Until we can go in next year, we hope that we can repeal the law, but we can't wait on repeal. We must have people ready to vote. You know, Atlanta has a mayor's race this year, as an example. So people are going to have to deal with these provisions coming up in November. So we're going to register folks. We're going to ask them to check their registrations to make sure they're not purged. We're going to educate them on all of the issues, from where you can stand to provide water and snacks to all of those components. And then we're going to get out the vote in November of this year and then have a postmortem on that so we understand what we need to go and do going into 2022. This is now a year-round effort, and we've got to be up to the task to raise the money, to have the infrastructure in place to attack on all of those levels.
Well, this is the critical fight here. I'm curious, what is the physical reality of the voting centers? Are they like storefronts or offices? What does a voting center look like?
It is
democracy center. I mean, it's a democracy
center. It's great. Good for you. They are storefronts. They're in the center of whatever the small town is. They're on Main Street. It's rented. It has at minimum one large room, but it also has a few smaller offices. This is the ideal, off the sides, so that people can have closed door meetings if they need them, or can do phone banking. They also have lots of chairs where students can do their homework in the afternoon if they need internet access, because nobody there has internet access. But they can host meetings once we get past a good bit of this COVID, to both watch the films that will be shown, to watch the presentations that Andrea and many others will do with people from Congress about bills going through the House, but also so they can host their own elected officials in a central location. And until we are able to meet physically, they can also use those center areas for socially distanced gatherings of local officials to then hold Zooms to be able to talk with people on Zoom, people in the local area for local issues.
So how many of these democracy centers are now in place?
There are seven that are in process. There are three physically in place. And there's a goal of 40 by the end of the year.
In Georgia.
No. Throughout the Southeast, including, we're adding Tennessee as well, and Texas and Arizona, but we're starting in the Black Belt areas in the South.
Wow. I mean, that's a fantastic thing to be doing. This could be, you know, a model for the whole country if we can get
yes.
off the ground.
Yes, and Harvey, we think it'll take $50,000 per year per center. And we've had a number of groups say, gee, could my indivisible group adopt one of these centers? And we love that idea. So if there's any chance the election protection group would like to adopt a center, we'd love to have you help do that. And yes, it will take some funding, but we're also paying salaries to people who work there part-time to help organize all of the efforts locally. Is we want it to be job creation as well, but we want people to really take it seriously and to make sure that the salary we're offering is appealing enough that we can get good people who will be very dedicated to this.
That's a great model for organizing. I mean, this is something that really could and should spread nationwide to do all sorts of things.
This is the core of what relational organizing is all about. This is what Andrea and Elsa and others have brought to the table in this area, and what a lot of our groups have been doing. And this is how we must shift the fundraising strategies that have not worked by pouring all of this money into
television,
TV advertising and all of this, and get to the ground, grassroots level, year-round where people are. That's the biggest frustration that we have. And we've got to change that dynamic. And it starts with us to challenge these folks that are raising these hundreds of millions of dollars to understand that putting TV ads out there is not what works if you want to change voters one vote at a time.
Well, you know, I saw a very interesting, I mentioned this last week, I saw a very powerful article in The Nation magazine saying pretty much what you just said about the Amazon strike, and that a lot of money in the Amazon strike went into digital and TV advertising, and what there was no indication that it worked. And what really worked was face-to-face, organizing at the factory. And by the way, I do want to mention, and this is important, I mean, we are interlinked with this kind of union organizing, that the union is going to be taking Amazon to court for all sorts of illegalities that were perpetrated during the organizing campaign at that Amazon facility in Alabama. And I think that as election protect, they're challenging the election itself in court. And I think as election protection organizers and advocates, that we need to pay really close attention to what happened at Amazon in Alabama. Because a lot of that stuff is exactly the same is what's in what Georgia and the other states, the other voter suppression states are lining up. I mean, that needs to be looked at very closely. So go ahead, Elsa.
Sorry, could I just, Jerry Tobe asked a wonderful question, and I'm starting to type an answer, but I'd love everybody to hear.
Oh no, please go ahead.
Thanks so much. And he said, so given that one-to-one is the important way to get to people, to convince people, to educate people, how will democracy centers address the local people's individual issues? And the whole point is not to have this top-down hierarchy where we say, well, here's what's going on in Washington. We want them to gather together and to say, what are our problems? What's happening in our backyard? What do we need to do with the school board, with the city council, in order to make sure that they don't just give up and say, oh, well, my vote never counts, or I'm the wrong color, they won't ever listen to me. But to gather people to say, what's happening with our quality of lives? Andrea is this great example of When the Republicans were in power, there was sewage in my backyard. When the Democrats were in power, there was still sewage in my backyard. Forget voting, it does nothing. Well, we want people to gather locally to say, what are the issues affecting us? What's going on too long? Who do we want to hold feet to the fire and to put on notice that they're not going to last in that role unless they take these things seriously and change. And there's just never been voter activism in so many of these places. And as Andrea also loves to say, if a state senator gets 10 calls about an issue, that is mind-blowing. That is huge. And here we are used to calling and writing our senators where it takes a lot to move things. Whereas if you do it on that local area, and if you have the people locally say, wait, here are our issues, that, and then they see results from that, that's fabulously empowering. And they can get all of their friends and family involved in that. But we want it to be very much not even a two-way street, but from the grassroots up. And unless we give them a place to gather and internet access, all of that is going to be harder for them.
My amazing, great stuff. Tatanka, you had got a hand,
yeah,
Tatanka?
I'm just realizing that I need to get Dolores Huerta and Camila involved in this discussion, because this is the organizing model they use in the Central Valley of California. It's called Vecinos Unidos. So it's neighbors united, and they do, it's the grassroots organizing that Dolores has been involved in her whole life, and very, very effective in get out the vote. So I'll just make sure she either sees the tape of this or get her on one of the next meetings, because they're also been asked, and they I think are getting a major grant to be able to send organizers out nationally now.
Well, and Katanka, but Katanka, may I say, Dolores has been on some of our meetings too,
right.
And she and Gabriela Limos, who's on the board for the Center for Common Ground, are close. So, yeah, and I know she and Andrea know each other. But anything you can do to help encourage that, because you're so right, the Central Valley is crying out for it.
Well, I'm curious. Whose name is on the door? When you put up a sign that says Democracy Center, who is the sponsor?
That's interesting. Me not having gone to one yet. It probably says the Center for Common Ground.
Okay. All right.
But Harvey, that's my guess. I will go find out.
All right. Monday. Very good. So we need to set up more of these. Howie Hawkins, has the Green Party done anything like that with Democracy Centers? Have you had storefronts for people to come in? Hold on, you're not unmuted yet. I'm asking to unmute you. There you go.
Yeah, I'm in a storefront right now. It hasn't been too populated during the COVID period, but my model is the old Black Panther Party office I used to see on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley when I was in high school. And I know they got a lot of their issues from people walking in, you know, sickle cell, escorting the seniors when they cash their checks to the grocery store, all kinds of issues. So, you know, that's how we find out what's going on in the community and what we need to be active on. And I mean, it's significant because we're the only party that does that. A lot of people think I'm the counselor from the district. I'm not. I got as high as 48% one time, but since we're out there all the time, you know, they come to us more than the counselor.
Well, that's good. I think maybe Elsa, we should think about locating these next to the pot shops. But I think that these democracy centers are really going to be the pillar of how we turn around this fascist assault on our voting rights. So let's leave it with that. Remember, this is Patriots Day and the rising of the ghetto, and and we'll see you next week, everybody, unless somebody's got a last word. All right, you guys, this has been a joy. These are absolutely joyous calls. Thank you so much,
Harvey.
Jeffrey, we'll get to you in a bit.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Harvey.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.